And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, Brecht said it's not really good to live in a country in heroic times. But in our country, we've had an astounding 4 months. The former president has been indicted for felonies at once in each of the last 4 months. Any one of these indictments would have been a historic, staggering event. But four? What do you think the political fallout of that is?
Well, in other times, it would have been far different. Don't forget, he also lost a defamation case.
Right.
So he's 0 for 5. We'll see about how he does in the criminal cases.
Right.
But these are different times, and we're dealing with something that is not normal politics. We're dealing with what a lot of people call as a cult, and you have a cult leader. We have an authoritarian personality who did not, grow up in the political arena. So has never really participated in governance. He's, been involved against governance for a long time, but he's never really participated in it and never really understood, never wanted to understand it because governance has rules and regulations, and he is a rule breaker. He's
a crook. He's not a rule breaker. He's a crook.
Well, he's a crook in order to do that. And that's what most authoritarians are grifters and crooks.
Yeah.
There's an old saying, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. He does neither.
Right.
He only doubles down and triples down because that's what, if you listen to what Ruth Bin-Ghiat says, that's what authoritarians do. And their cult following, having invested themselves in him and having seen him as their surrogate, cannot break with that because what he's doing is their surrogacy. He's doing what they consider for them, as misplaced that as that is.
Well, he has a big following. I mean, we're not talking about 50 people here. We're talking about 15-18% of the American population.
Yeah.
That's a big group of people. So let me ask you this. Are we looking here at a crisis within American democracy, or is this a crisis of American democracy?
That's a good question. It's a crisis that is using American democracy to abuse American democracy and to, in fact, do away with American democracy. Again, this is the new pattern, the Orban pattern, what's happening in Poland and other places in Turkey, where the autocrats take power, but they do so in what has the trappings of democracy through elections. But then they rigged the system so that they are able to stay in power, or at least try to stay in power. The one thing I was going to say—
Well, the Burmese generals have been doing that for years, right?
Well, that's with coups and stuff like that.
But, if it gets out of hand, they straighten things out.
Yeah, come back in, and what have you. But the thing is that I was going to say, the surprise was not that you would get, somebody that might come along and act as an authoritarian or a tyrant, as the founders worried. The surprise is that they were able to he was able to capture the entire Republican, I don't want to say the entire, but a good part of the Republican Party and its leadership.
Well, he carried and then he purged, right? I mean, if you didn't go along with these guys, they got rid of you.
Or he tried to. Anyway,
he was successful. There were
some he couldn't get rid of. He couldn't get rid of Mitch McConnell. And McConnell had an opportunity to get rid of him, but chose to try to keep Trump in power so that McConnell could get through what he wanted to get through. McCarthy was a different story. McCarthy proved that he had no backbone. Neither did Lindsey Graham. It would have been more interesting if John McCain were still alive, whether he would be leading a resistance. Mitt Romney, to some extent, was leading that, but he's having lost the presidential election, he doesn't have much sway in the Republican Party.
No.
So we're left with this Trumpism, and he's now finding that there's other ways or means to perhaps corral his power. And he's doing whatever he can to try to get rid of it. But the court system, remember, the court system held, surprisingly, even with his appointees after 2020. He had 60-some cases and lost all of them. He had a half of a win in one case, and that was it. But these were Trump-appointed judges, and he didn't win with them. And there were some...
Well, of course, you got to admit that the cases that they were asked to pass on were ridiculous. I mean, these were the fevered imaginations of Sidney Powell and argued by the drunken Rudy Giuliani. So, you know, it wasn't like he was putting his best foot forward.
Yeah, but you would think there would always be somebody, you know, a Judge Cannon in there, so to speak, who would have given him what he wanted.
That's true.
Clarence Thomas would have given him certain things, but was outvoted. He was not a Trump appointee, but his wife is a Trump acolyte.
Yeah.
And promoter. So, that was before we knew of all of his other conflicts of interest. But now what Trump is left doing is... It might be the last acts of desperation, other than trying to convince a military coup. And that's, he's trying to win by threats.
So let's assume he doesn't win. But you've got Ramaswamy, who says, I can be a younger and better Trump. You've got DeSantis, who says, I can be a younger and better Trump. What's the difference which Trump, younger, older? Let's assume this guy goes, but the Trumpist movement remains. If the Trumpist movement is a threat to American democracy, it can't be handled by American democracy. It doesn't really matter whether Trump stays or goes.
Well, that remains to be seen, because a lot of times when the authoritarian leader does not really develop a successor by himself. He doesn't want anybody to come along and be successful. So what has Trump done? He has spent his time attacking DeSantis. And you have to say somewhat successfully, because DeSantis has lost his funding and he's lost his numbers on this. Ramaswamy is a wannabe, but doesn't have anywhere near the gravitas. And he's another guy, you know, he's a mini-me Trump. He worked entirely outside of the political system. He's another one of these guys that was in business where he was the king of his own realm.
And he tells you straight out. He doesn't think anybody should vote unless they can pass a test.
Right. you wonder whether he could pass a test.
That's right.
But those are irrelevant, because there's always double standards,
right,
with these guys.
Right.
There's always double standards. But, we're talking about the threats that Trump is making. He said, if you come for me, I'm coming for you. And that's sort of like a Rorschach test. Who's he referring to? Is he referring to the Jack Smith? Is he referring to anybody in Congress who doesn't toe his line? Is he referring to the judge?
How about all of the above?
All of the above, yeah. And, of course, already we've seen people trying to act on that. There was a woman down in Texas who was arrested for threatening the judge. And, you know, there's been other threats. In Georgia, the names of the grand jurors were released. I guess Georgia law, you have to do that. But
You don't release their addresses and their phone numbers, which somebody got. Yeah.
Someone went out and did that.
Yeah.
And that's a threat. Don't forget, Trump threatened those, or he didn't have to threaten, his people did, those two women in Georgia who he accused of stealing votes and what have you.
Passing them around like cocaine.
Yeah. And he now he's being sued for defamation by those ladies. They'll have to stand in line trying to collect from him.
Yeah.
They have a pretty strong case. But he's, you know, he it's the bullying and whatever, and he's threat, you know, there all these other threats that are out there. By the way, the Georgia law was quite different than the New York law. If you remember when he got indicted in New York went out of its way to hide the identities of the grand jurors.
Right.
So that they wouldn't be threatened or retaliated against. And I think the system requires that if anybody does this, that they be arrested, they be tried, and if convicted, they have to be punished very severely. You'll notice that.
So you're on the side of those people who say Trump needs to. It would be impermissible not to try Trump. You know, there's a lot of people,
absolutely,
a lot of legal scholars and political people who are writing. Currently saying, oh, it's terrible for American democracy to try him because it'll make things irretrievably broken down.
I'm with the other side. If you don't try him, it's going to irretrievably break things down.
Right. Okay.
This is what the law is for.
If you don't try him, isn't it the case that the crisis in democracy becomes the crisis of democracy?
Yes. You know, and leaders in other countries, you know, Berlusconi went to jail and it kind of dissipated his power. There have been two or three presidents of Israel who have been tried and gone to jail.
By prime ministers, you
know? Yeah, one former prime minister.
Yep.
You're right on that. So other countries could do this, and they still maintain their democracy. So it has to be done. The thing I worry about is something that a lawyer that I used to share office space with once said about a jury. And he said, there's a paradox. I won't mention his name. We used to call it by his name. But the more things they say, he used to say that a defendant did wrong or was negligent, the harder it is for a jury to understand it. And I'm afraid of that in the American public. The more things that they get Trump on, it's going to be harder for the American public to focus in on something and discern how severe and depraved his actions were. That's what worries me.
Well, that may be a good worry on the legal side. I have a different worry. My worry is that people in the people who really need to be defending democracy will be thinking that the law will take its course, and that's how these malfactions will be handled. In other words, it's not the political process that will handle this political issue. It's the legal process. And in that case, the Trump people win. They win politically.
Well, you know, they're still trying to treat this as an ordinary political situation when it isn't. It's an extraordinary political
who's
situation.
Who's they? Who's the they?
I think a lot of people in the media, for instance.
Yes.
They don't understand this. And, you know, what they should have seen was back in 2016, you had 15 seasoned Republican office holders that went up against Trump in the primaries, and they played ordinary politics. And Trump didn't play by those rules.
Right.
And ate their lunch.
Right.
And the media continues to give the same, you know, it's the same, but Hillary has emails.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But there's Hunter Biden or, you know, or let's have a third party, you know, the no labels type of thing.
Yeah.
No. You've got to, you know, you're an American first. You know, during World War II, the press didn't try to give equal time to the German side of things.
No.
You know, they backed the, you know, the anti-fascist movement to wholly. And that's what you have to do. That's what you have to do.
But you remember from history that the analog to the American right-wing corporate people in Germany were the conservative industrialists who supported Hitler, knowing that they could control him.
Right. And, of course, the Republican office holders in Washington thought the same thing. We can control Donald Trump.
And that's what these media people think also.
Yeah. And you can't.
No.
You know, I'm reminded of Leni Riefenstahl's masterpiece. And you remember the title of it?
The Triumph of the Will.
Will. And Adolf Hitler had this iron will to pursue at all costs and by any means possible to come to power and to affect what he wanted to affect. That's Donald Trump's the same thing.
Right.
He has got an iron will on this. I think if there's any light there to look at, it's that he is so focused on this past election that he, which he's seen as losing, that it dissipates some of the concentration of his power or the power of his will. He's sort of wasting it on that rather than move to the next stage. And
that's right. If he didn't waste his time on that, he would have a much more united fascist party behind him.
Yeah. And you hear that from Republicans. It's time to move on.
Yeah. The DeSantis people wouldn't be DeSantis people. They have no reason to be DeSantis people. They'd be right with Trump all the way.
Right. Right. Because that was DeSantis' argument. I'm Trump without the baggage.
Yeah. That's right.
Turns out, you know, he's created his own baggage, though. So, the interesting
But Republicans
thing,
in general, and in place after place where they can try and get away with it, disregard the law all the time.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. The law is not for them. It's for you. Restriction is not for them. Supervision, oversight, that's not for them. That's for you. The union shouldn't be allowed to do whatever, but we should be allowed to do the very same thing on our side.
Two sets of rules.
Yep.
When you're in power, there's one thing. When we get power, it's something else.
That's right.
And it never was that way. There was always this give and take in politics. You win an election, you get to do what you want to do. We'll get you the next time. But starting with Newt Gingrich back in the 90s, that kind of went away. That kind of went away. And it's only increased more and more and more, this devolution of politics has gotten worse and worse and worse over the last 20, 25 years.
So now there's a lot of talk about how bad polarization is. But there's two aspects to this, how bad polarization is. Polarization is bad in the American democratic system because the American democratic system isn't designed to handle polarization. It's not designed to handle parties. It was designed to avoid parties. The guys who wrote it didn't imagine there would be political parties, and when political parties immediately developed, they didn't do anything about it. But
they called them factions.
They called them, yeah, that's right, factions. And but those factions, within 20 years, came to dominate the Constitution. But the Constitution isn't written to accommodate these factions. The kind of Supreme Court we have, the lifetime appointments, the fact that you have states that have equal standing and a Senate based on that and a House based on popular sovereignty or popular representation, they don't mesh. this is not a system that was designed for the world that we live in, and yet it can't be changed because it's impossible at this point to amend the Constitution. There have been 12,000 proposed amendments to the Constitution over time. 12 have passed. 27 have passed. So, yeah.
Well, actually, after the Bill of Rights, you're only talking 17.
Yes. Yeah. So polarization is bad in this system, but in systems where you have proportional representation, where you have multi-party parliamentary systems, polarization works. In fact, polarization helps democracy. Each trend has its own group, and they have to figure out ways to coordinate with each other, to tolerate each other, and it works.
Well,
it certainly works. And you say, well, the Italian government has fallen so many times. But meanwhile, Italy is a functioning country. It's not a terrible place to live. I mean, it may have a right-wing government. That's true. It may have bad aspects to it, but the point is the government system works, and polarization is not the problem there.
Well, I'm not sure that, you know, having a turnover every 18 months as in Italy is, you know, it works basically because I guess the bureaucrats stay around.
But that's true about every government.
Yeah.
Every state system, the bureaucracy manages to keep the system moving, so you have to have a bureaucracy. There's nothing wrong with that, a civil service.
But as long as things are fairly status quo, that's okay. But if you're in need of doing bigger or greater things, I mean, Italy isn't known for making any world-changing decisions on there.
Well, but so what? But in terms of what the Italian people want or need, they fight it out. They struggle through it. The country is not, as we call it, a failed state. It's not that.
No.
America is at the verge of becoming a failed state. The Congress can't pass laws. The Congress can't keep the government open. That's a failed state.
Well, we got a possible shutdown coming next month again.
And we just had one that possibly came. We thought we were avoiding it. They made a deal. The deal fell through 2 weeks after they made it.
But that's, again, this authoritarianism, because they want to break down institutions. They want to get people thinking that, you know, the government can't work, and you know, it's a change of mindset.
Well, if they're determined to make the government not work, they're right.
Right. You know,
they have they have the ability to make the government not work.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Supreme Court. The last the judges on the Supreme Court, four of the nine, were ratified in their office by senators who represented a minority of the American people. The majority of the senators, that is to say, the senators who represented the majority of the people of the country, voted against them. Yet
well,
they're the ones who were there getting rid of the abortion. They're the ones who are doing all these anti-democratic, anti-people things.
Well, the majority has been appointed by presidents who lost the popular vote.
That's right. That's exactly right.
You know, technically, there was one of the Bush appointees, I guess, was in his second term, but it wouldn't have been a second term if he didn't lose the first term.
Right. That's right. So, you know, it very well it could be a crisis of American democracy. If the Democrats don't figure out a way to rally people, to make people come into the streets, really, in defense of their rights. If they leave it to the judges, they're leaving it to Alito. That's not very good leadership.
No, no.
Your friend Alito, I might say.
Well, anyways.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, we got threats everywhere besides Trump.
There are threats against democracy. And an unwillingness. Ohio had the Supreme Court in Ohio repeatedly said that the gerrymander of the legislature was improper, and they sent it back four or five times. The legislature, in essence, ignored the Supreme Court. It just happened in Alabama, and it just happened in Louisiana.
Yeah, you know what the governor of Alabama said? Because a reporter asked her at a press conference, how come you didn't follow the Supreme Court rule that you had to redraft the districts? And she said, we know Alabama better than the Supreme Court. Well, okay, that's not a crisis of American democracy. Fits my definition.
Yeah, I mean, we have that. We were talking, you know, in Wisconsin, the election last year turned the nature of the Supreme Court from conservative to moderately liberal. And that new justice was just sworn in. There are two big cases in front of it. One is has to do with the validity of the abortion law from, I think it's 1849, and the other is the gerrymandering of the court. And the legislature, Republicans in the legislature, have in essence told the new justice that if she votes against what they want to do, they're going to impeach her.
They're going to impeach her because they don't like her vote on the law. So what happened to separation of powers? I thought that's what the Republicans are all for, separation of powers.
Well, they're trying to capture all the different branches. And, you know, Pennsylvania, they threatened the Supreme Court. You know, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court came out with a new map, which changed a 13-5 Republican majority in the Congress to a 9-9, and they threatened to change the way the court is made up to put it into districts, which would enshrine a permanent conservative court.
Absolutely right. Exactly.
Again, we don't like this, and we're going to change the rules. North Carolina, they changed the composition of the court, and the court immediately went back and undid a ruling that was only a year old, about the makeup of the legislature. So, I mean, they're playing power politics. That's about it.
Well, it's up to the Democrats to figure out some way to stop this. And they have to figure it out by way of trying to figure out how to gain the allegiance of working people and young working people, especially.
Yeah.
Because in the final analysis, it's the young people's world, that they're the ones who are going to inherit this world.
Well, that's the other thing that the Republicans are afraid of. Generation Z is not only more liberal, but they're showing up at the polls like young people didn't have to. So that's where you get this Vivek Ramaswamy, who says that people under 25 shouldn't be allowed to vote.
Right. The hell with the Constitution. As usual.
They pass tests. Yeah. 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 And they keep trying to make it harder and harder for people to vote.
Well, that's it. Threats. That's the weak. That's what we're looking at. Threats. Threats on every front, which the opposition to these threats has to do better than it's doing now.
Yeah. We'll see what happens in the debate this week, whether Chris Christie, who is not very easily intimidated or, worried about threats, how he comes out on that. That might be the only entertaining value of that.
Yeah, but don't forget, and in the final analysis, that's still a debate amongst the other guys, amongst the demagogues and the authoritarians. We have to pay attention to what our guys are doing.
I think.
All right. We'll be interested in what you think about the debate, and we'll talk about it next week.
See you next week.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.